Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, my name's Saffron and I'm from London. And you're listening to Dame Baptiste Questions Everything. My question is, what is something we should stop normalizing? Okay, here comes the show. And remember, question everything.
Hello everybody, welcome to this episode of Dame Baptiste Questions Everything, a podcast for myself, comedian, writer and occasional actor Dame Baptiste, our producer friend Howard Cohen, aka The Hizzer.
Hello!
And a mix of a very special guests pose the questions that need to be asked, and we are talking everything from
Saffron, our producer Saffron, who's leaving us now. Bye Saffron, thanks for everything. I mean that. Thanks for everything, Saffron. Her question from London is, what is something we should stop normalising? Dave, what should we stop normalising?
Question, we should stop normalising people rapport building and building friendships and then walking away from them.
Yeah, professional or otherwise, right?
Unceremoniously is what we need to be doing. I'm not pointing anybody out in particular, Saffron from part of London who I've never met before, winkety wink. Did you like, hear the wink on camera? Anyway, we will miss you, Saffron. I'm not processing the grief very well, but I think we should stop normalising people having to adjust their lifestyles due to this government causing a cost of living crisis. I'm tired of having to hear people find alternatives for getting some sleep or for having two meals a day or wrapping themselves up extra warm because we are dealing with the economic crisis that has been caused by austerity and no fault of the people. Yep. I'm tired of that being normalised.
Well said, and thank you for the question, Saffron, and all your hard work. Bye. And suffice to say, on this podcast, we ask and answer all the questions, don't we, Dave?
Absolutely. And if you do like the show, please rate and review on Apple Podcasts or follow us on Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, and you'll never miss an episode where you can hear all of our very special questions being asked and answered by our very special guests. With that being said, on today's show is a comedian and podcaster who has had numerous TV and radio appearances, including Yanga TV, Pulse FM, and BBC Radio, just to name a few. He has performed at some of the top comedy clubs in the country, including the Comedy Store, Hackney Empire, and has performed at the Indigo O2 as well. He also has his own podcast, Griff's Brain Dump, where he allows the listener to enter the mind of a comedian, where he himself dumps his weekly thoughts out, whether it's personal life, sport, music, news, social commentary, observation of others, as well as fatherhood. He makes sure he has a very unique view on the subject, whether it is relevant or irrelevant to our daily lives. And he will also be taking his debut show to Edinburgh for the first time this year. So he is about to go Nova. Do you want to catch him while he is still bubbling? Please welcome to the show, Mr. Darren Griffiths.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Be here.
What do you think of our listener question? What do you think is something we should stop normalising, Darren?
Stop normalising. Stop normalising the idea that that all opinions are equal and valid.
Do you know what? That's so good. That's good. That's really good. You've nailed it in one.
Thanks for coming on the show. Goodbye.
That's it. Nailed it in one. Yeah. Some people just don't need to speak, Darren.
No,
you're right. Some people don't need to speak. You know, we're dealing with a serious economic crisis because at least 52% of a voting demographic decided to vote for something they had no idea what it was.
Right. Like, so, I didn't even want to vote on that. It was too complex.
It was way too complex. And the person who told us to vote knew it was too complex. That's why when we voted, he was like, oh, you're like idiots, I'm going to leave. Yeah, I resign. This is crazy. There's no way.
Because it's one of those things, so you look back at the history of our policies in the sense of, you know, at the time, it was very fun to laugh at Theresa May, but what a hospital ball she received. It was such a steaming back.
It really
just
was.
It's like, oh, have that. And yeah, she was like,
That's where that robot dust came from. She was like, that's really jerking.
Let's try and get her on the show, Dane. She's not up to much, is she, anymore?
I'm sure she's doing fine, wherever she is. Yeah. But anyone since then, it's almost as been as if, like, you know what? You know what it reminds me of? The government now. Do you know when you perform at the Comedy Store and it's like a break, and then all the drunk people go and say, "Go take a picture of me in front of this microphone. Take a picture of it. I'm doing comedy." That's what the last like three prime ministers and the chancellor have been. Yeah. It's a bunch of people being like, "I can do it. Give it in my hand." And everyone's gone, "Get Dan. All right." Right, it might like even down to the culture secretary who like hates other cultures. I feel like that shouldn't be your job. Or like then we had the equalities minister who doesn't believe there's racial inequality in this country and shouldn't have to listen to it. So
we got the chancellor recently who forgot to declare his luxury apartments.
Oh yeah, that guy as well. Yeah, and then the one who was like, "I'm in charge of the money," and then a few days later was like, "The money has never been lower in history." We need to definitely start normalizing. Not everyone should have an opinion. Yeah. Not everyone deserves a chance.
No.
Yeah, well, participation trophies, they were a bad idea.
Exactly.
Generation X was right.
That grey cloud of disaster hanging over us, it's probably time for a question, isn't it, Dane, as the format of this show dictates?
Absolutely. Darren, as our very esteemed guest, we'd like to invite you to ask the first question. Could be any question you'd like, which I'd like to discuss for about 15 minutes. Then my producer friend Howard would like to pose a question to you to discuss for the same amount of time. Then keeping up with tradition, I would like to pose a question for you that we discuss for 15 minutes. And then we'd love for you to tell our listeners and viewers where they can find out about your good works, past, present and future. And I guess I will try and hold it together while Saffron walks away. Darren, the floor is yours to ask the first question.
Okay, so my question is, it might sound odd, so I may have to explain it after. But it is this: why do people have children?
Good question.
What inspired this question, Darren?
Of course. So my show that I'm taking up to Edinburgh is called Inconceivable, and it is about mine and my wife's struggle to have our first child, and we had to go through IVF to do that. But going through that does make you question why you want children. Not so much going through it, but facing the roadblock of not being able to have kids.
Yes, yeah.
You then suddenly go, "Oh, why do I actually want kids?" And when you speak to other people who don't want them, and they're like, "Oh, well, no, that's definitely not the reason why I wouldn't want them. I think I definitely want them."
Yeah.
I mean, for that reason. So
I can leap into this one with a fully, both testicles.
Yeah.
because I've done similar stuff, man.
Right, brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, this feels like a confessional scenario now, Dane, rather than a normal. But like, how long was your before you have a person now? You've made a human.
Yeah, made a human. Yes.
How long did it take to make the human?
So it's
obviously I'm not talking about the little bit, I'm talking about the longer process.
Yeah, the longer process. Yeah, yeah.
You can include it as a cumulative figure if you
yeah,
want.
Yeah, no, so I guess me
12 minutes, right?
It's 12, wow.
Isn't
okay,
that standard. Isn't that normal?
Seven over here. But
a divine number.
But we met in 2017.
Right.
I didn't think we were particularly trying, but
She didn't tell you.
Yeah, she didn't tell me. But we weren't particularly careful either. And then from the moment of I'm acknowledging there's a problem from having like my first test done to have some kind of semen analysis, that was probably mid-2019. And then we didn't have our daughter, we didn't conceive until October 20.
Right.
And stuff. So in the scheme of things, and compared to other people go through that process, not that long.
Mm. It's like 4 years, that, or three years?
Yeah,
3 years.
But it's in the sense of, for me, feeling like I'm in that process, it was from mid-2019 to the end of 2020. Mm. So just over a year. Mm. It wasn't one of those ones, you have couples who try tirelessly for 10 years and go through, four or five rounds of IVF, and it's just heartbreak. We didn't have that, but was in it longer than I would want to.
Did you have because this is the thing, I think I've told you about this in my life. I've talked to you about it off mic, Dane. Did you have like the ups and the downs when you were trying, or was it just like, we're not getting anywhere? Because that's what happens to a lot of people. They just don't get pregnant.
Yeah, so we just didn't get pregnant. We just didn't get pregnant. And like trying to have a kid is really not fun.
When you're trying to have a kid.
Yeah, when you're trying to have a kid.
Yeah, that's an important point.
Because I think it's painted to us that, and I think that's why you have the similar line of questioning. When you get married, then because we can have kids. And even in your head, you're like, well, we get married in 3 months.
3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
You know, we'll try and we'll have a kid and it'll be great.
Can I have a holiday first, please? With my new partner. Back off, everyone. Honestly,
it's
can
the
I
difference
can
between
I experience sleep? A few, maybe a few lions just before, you know.
But everyone likes playing football with their mates, but not everyone's gonna go pro, right?
Right.
And that's kind of what situation you're
very, very little people will go pro.
And you know what I mean? You going pro with you know, your guys are like, you know, they need to, you know, deliver.
They'd
right?
be very good. And yeah, and you find out that they're not. It's just like, oh. And then you then go back in time and you think about all those times that you thought, because I'm speaking on my own behalf, but I think on behalf of a lot of guys, when you look back at near misses, you've convinced yourself that the reason why that woman didn't get pregnant was because of some kind of action you took, whether that was contraception or, you know, pull out game strong.
Or in my case, just no chances to actually have sex. So
the best form of abstinence.
Really 100%
effective contraception there.
So yeah, so then you go through those moments and then you're suddenly like, did they need to have taken any of like more than after pill or if when I use contraception, was it actually doing anything, obviously, other than protecting from like potential risk of STDs? But the pregnancy element, you then question that, and then I said, went back to the question of, you know, then you're with someone and you want kids and you can't have them, you then question why you're even with someone. And you know, do you want the same thing? So I guess that's just
question. I mean, mate, honestly, it's a great question, right, Dane? And God, I've got a lot I can unpack here.
Please do.
I don't know. I don't know if we're ready for it.
We're ready. It's as a going away present for Saffron.
Oh, man.
Let's talk about your balls.
Let's talk about your balls.
Horrible life she leads. I mean, look, the thing about this is that it's, you know, that it's kind of interesting hearing Darren's take on it, because I would say it kind of feels like a monotonous experience where you were forced into this situation, you know, by biology, and you just were playing a waiting game. That basically, one of the horrible things about that is you just don't know. You could just be waiting forever, right? Well, that's not what happened with me. You know, that's not what happened with me. And it's, you know, it's hard to talk about. I'm not going to lie. You know, we got married and got pregnant pretty quickly,
right.
And that didn't work out. And that happened a handful of times to us before my kid was born. And let me tell you. Anyone that says, you know, you get back on with it, you don't.
No.
Like, it is like losing the worst game show in the world, turning up at those scans, and it's like heartbeat or no heartbeat is the fucking game show that you're playing, you know? And it is brutal. Obviously, it's even more brutal on the woman.
It's a real catch-22, because it's almost like, there's a line where you don't want to be too excited and attached to something where there is the possibility of miscarriage. But at the same time, you can't be like, well, I don't really care, because you're like, well, it's your child, or potentially your child. So you always have to be emotionally involved. And I think, as myself, one of the ways you can try and protect yourself from stuff is to, like, I don't want to attach myself emotionally to this too much.
Mm.
It's not really a tactic you can use when it comes to having children.
No, you can't. And
you have to care. That's why, because that's why I'm doing this.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah, you have to care. And it's that weird thing, what Howard just said there, where he's described how bad it is and then just added that little bit at the end of, it's even worse for the woman.
Mm.
And you've got this kind of thing of, as the guy in that situation, where it's almost like you're not really allowed to process it as much as you would like to.
No.
Because you then also have to play the role of support for your wife. And then it's obviously she's going through it. And you almost forget yourself that you're going through it as well.
And then you end up, you know, you naturally will become a pragmatist, right? Because you need to be a pragmatist for this person who's physically experiencing something that we ultimately couldn't imagine. I remember we got a chalkboard in where we have our breakfast, and like I remember writing on the chalkboard, like, here's what our life's gonna look like if we never have kids,
right?
And it's gonna look really good, isn't it? That's like a pretty good life. I think about that a lot, cause now that chalkboard has a list of all the foods that my son will eat. It's almost like the alternative couldn't go more to the other side of things. I just remember with that, you know, you had loads of tests, right?
Yeah.
I remember all the tests. I mean, mine were inconclusive. And obviously now the conclusive proof is in the two humans that we have living in our house, you know. But like, I remember going through the test and one of these doctors saying to me, like, oh, you know, we got the results back. I mean, I never thought I'd talk about this today, but here we are. We got the results back on your test. You do your business, Dane, and they get the test back like in a minute. I don't know, quicker than you're in there.
My NHS had to wait 2 or 3 weeks.
These guys were like, we paid the bit down. I can't remember where we were, but like they were like, in the next room, we'll see you in a minute. And they're like, the guy told me, he said to me, you've got a third more sperm than the average guy. And I was literally high-fiving him, high-fiving my wife. I was like, yes. And then he's like, yeah, but listen. Basically, he said, in long summary, so you're telling me that half of them are stoned. He was like, yeah. He's like, most of them don't know where they're going. They're just not going anywhere. They just look stoned. So I stopped smoking weed for a while. That didn't seem to cure it either.
Yeah, because that's for you get this weird.
Those high fives must have felt like.
Can I take those back, please?
Keep going. It's kind of like being a politician and being like, but what about your affair? Oh, okay. Well, back in the car, everybody.
Great to see everyone. Yeah. No, but I think to try and get to the point of answering your question, which I would say, you know, in those 4 years with number of downs, you know, I really gained a different perspective on it to what I had before.
Sure.
You know, and why do people have kids? Oh man, like I really question what the point was in doing it in all that time. Like, is this really going to be worth it?
Because the question's forced, isn't it?
You're
forced to have that question. Because most people, many people do just accidentally stumble upon having children. Yep. It's like, you now have them. When you have that kind of.
Because there's a lot of semantics behind it as well, where I've not been through the same experience as you guys, but I imagine like part of like processing that grief, where you know you talk about the stages of loss and grief, and you know the anger part of it is probably the idea where it's like there are other people who irresponsibly make children all the time without thinking about it. They walk off, they leave their kids, they don't care about their kids, or they take care of them. Or you have people that are just when they even have children, they're negligent. And
Dane,
you start
to think to yourself, should I have some of those kids because they've not got any parents? You know, there's kids out there. Should we just help these kids who've been, you know, who've had shit parents?
You mean like adoption or?
Yeah, obviously that's what you start to think about. Yeah, you know, you start to go down that road and it's like, you know.
Surrogacy.
For me, it was like I wanted to try and, the reality of it is, to me, the simplest thing ever, which is you in your life will love people, right? Your family and your friends and, you know, people you work with and, you know, all the people you encounter in your life. And it's just brilliant different loves that you have, like, you know, pets. You have these loves for things in your life. And until you have that person, that kid, you just never knew that there was an entire other version of love that you had inside you that was, you know, only until they arrive do you realize it.
No, 100%. Even that bit we were talking about adoption, I had to weep as you were thinking those questions. And I knew for me that wasn't an answer to my question. So it says, there's something else there. Simply adopting isn't enough. Now I have kids. There's part of me that'd be like, oh, actually, I would foster and I'd want to give back now. But there was something obviously in my head that I still haven't really fully unpacked of why, no, that child has to be biologically a part of me.
Maybe that's part of the answer, is that it's not just a question of something where you discuss the moralism or semantics of raising a child. There is a biological instinct, and a lot of us have it, to reproduce in the first place. And it's just obviously, when you contextualize it within society, that's been something that's been distorted or been taken and kind of been able to be re-contextualized as whether it's your sexual proclivity and your prowess, when a lot of time it's just we are mammals and we need to reproduce.
Dane, you said a while ago during lockdown, so it is a while ago now, something that stuck with me, and I think about it all the time when I'm with my kids. It comes up all the time. And she said, I was talking to Karen, I think we might have been talking to Judy Love or something. It's someone on the show. You said, I was talking about the kid. He's like, yeah, you're marveling at your creation, Howard. I was like, fuck, man, that's it. That's it. That is the absolute truth. There's times where you're looking at them and going, I think I eat blueberries like that.
Which I imagine it's a real experience to watch like a smaller version of yourself do certain things, because you have to think about, I guess, when with children, they're even observing every minute detail of how to human from seeing you.
100%.
So it's almost like your smile or even the way you might smirk is something they learn from you, and they take all of their visual cues from you as well.
Yeah.
My son says sure. all the time because I say sure. Because he'll say, "Can I have some blueberries later?" And I'll say, "Sure." So now he just, I say to him, can we go to bath time there? He'll be like, sure.
Yeah, my daughter starts saying cheers. Now.
Yeah, there you go. You've got cheers.
I was like, oh God, I need to stop saying that in front of you. Yeah, and it is those weird things that you see in your kids. My daughter, someone said to me before, everything you dislike in your child is a trait from you.
Yes.
Mm. And it's just the fact that you're not used to seeing it from the third person perspective.
You say that, but I don't ever remember shitting myself first thing in the morning. But I guess it happened.
It's a typical Howard trait.
Yeah. One of the reasons Saffron's leaving. mate, what a great question. That's an amazing question. I could talk about that question all episode, but we're gonna move on.
It's great. I couldn't possibly answer it, but... It's a good question. I think it's
what do you think of our take?
I think it's a great good take, but I think it's not that I would advocate for people to ever struggle at all to reproduce, but I think that it's definitely something that people should be able to discuss very openly. So even when I think it should also be a part of like sex education.
Yeah.
Like obviously, you know, people understand about sex and we can talk about orientation and then the importance of the fluidity of sexuality and we can talk about like consent and these are obviously important and should be important pillars of that discussion. But I definitely think when it comes to reproduction, we should speak about why people want to have kids. Because I think one of the things that I have thought about in my own introspection about having children is that obviously you make a child and it's my kid. But when you are thinking about your pondering your own existence, you don't think about you being owned by somebody else.
Yes, that's true.
And so at some point, you know, you as much as you're like, this kid is reflective of me and everything they do is me. At some point, in whether they do it in a nice way or they are a bit more malicious about it, they'll be like, can you leave me alone, person? I'm my own person, please. Because you're like, this person is completely dependent on me. And then the one day is going to come where it's like, you don't need to come in my room. I have my own separate life.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of part of it as well, is that, you know, I guess it's part of sacrifice is something people should consider as well, because I feel there's a number of human issues which stem from the fact that people either cannot let go of the fact that their children have their own lives, or they, people want to live vicariously through their children.
Yeah, cool.
Because a child is a younger version of themselves, is like, well, now I can try to live the life I want using this person as a proxy. And I'm not sure if all of these things are healthy. And I feel like we all know most time people seek therapy is based on issues that stem from childhood and the relationship with their parents. So I think everybody should have to ask themselves or fill in a form. I think there should be a theory and practical test when it comes to sex.
Yeah, I'm game for that. Not just before it. But I'd want a bit of a gap.
Well, just as
I don't want to fill in a form before I have. I'm not going to be in that situation. My question is very different, Darren, but your question was excellent.
Oh, cheers, thank you.
And I look forward to, you said an Edinburgh show this year about that.
Yeah, sure.
Well, I'm sure there'll be a lot of blokes.
Good name too.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm sure there'll be a lot of blokes holding hands, trying not to look at each other, like the end of Toy Story 3. my question, it's worth pointing out to listeners, I don't know Darren. Well, I don't know you, do
I? No,
no. But like, I was thinking of you coming here today, and I was thinking, it's really nice to meet you for a reason that I feel a bit embarrassed about talking to you about.
Okay.
Which is that my name's Howard.
Yep.
And I would class myself as having a bit of a shit name. Now, I don't want to be rude, okay? Don't want to be rude. But I would say traditionally, the name Darren is a tough name. It's a tough sell. It's gone out of fashion, right? There's some names that have... Dane's face when I'm saying this. I feel like I'm in trouble. But Darren's reaction is...
I'm in the back of this plane, experiencing the turbulence, alongside my fellow model named Saffron. Yeah, trying to work out how it's going to land
Saffron,
this plane.
I mean, those are two great, strong names, right?
What can I say? Never know keyrings, like, though. What I'm saying.
Howard is so confident in his shit name that he knows other shit names when he says them. And he is right.
Yeah. I've been really awkward.
It's like one of these moments where you buy a decent pair of like Primark shorts. You're like, these are decent, you know. And then you go on holiday and it's like a man 20 years older and he goes, oh, yeah.
Exactly.
It's like, you know, another one is Harold. I often get Harold because I'd introduce myself and say my name's Howard. And they'll go, Harold. And I'll go, no, it's the other shit name. It's not Harold, it's Howard. Anyway, but there are some shit names. And what makes a shit name? That's why are good. They shit? I can't really tell you why the name Howard is a shit name.
No,
but Darren,
Darren is spelt with two A's as opposed to.
Yeah, and let me. I'm not sure
sorry,
if that makes.
I've got to tell you one thing about Darren that makes it very special for me, and this is he would fucking hate me doing this. But my oldest brother's middle name is Darren, right? And we were rinsing for ages about it, and he didn't get married, right? He had kids and a partner and everything, and they decided to get married many years later. And we were there at the registry office, and I just remember the moment where it's building up to saying his middle name. And I'm looking at my other brother and all his mates from school. And honestly, I'm holding a camera because I'm supposed to be filming, just shaking because I can't cope because they're about to say that his middle name's Darren. And he had to, and not only does they say it, he's got to say it back, hasn't he?
Because she has to say it.
Yeah, she's got to say it. Honestly, it was incredible. It was one of the funniest moments of my life.
She's saying the vowels are going,
there's a sickness in the sickness and health. There you go.
But, what, you know, I don't know why. I mean, I guess, I don't know, it's unfair. Maybe I'm just unfair on the Darrens.
No, and as
it's Darren, yeah, not Darren.
They pointed out my name is spelt slightly differently, but I'm not sure if that makes it worse. I'm not sure if someone's burnt a meal and you've just tried to put ketchup on top of it and gone, look, it's not that bad. It's not that bad. So
it's a flambé, kind of.
Yeah.
Dear, I mean, I'm over here with Saffron, sitting here with names like supermodels.
I mean, yeah.
So it's very different over here. That being said, you know.
What makes a shit name?
I think it's about the profile of people who have the name as well.
Mm. Okay.
So I think Darren didn't start off as a shit. And shit's probably a harsh word to use.
Yeah.
The word you're looking for is common. And I think when the name becomes common, then people are pained to say it. Because you know what's not a common name? Adolf. But no one, there's not a lot of adults coming through.
But I wouldn't be like, ha ha, you know, like Howard. Like even just, let me just say it a few, Howard. Like, listen to the sound of that. It just doesn't, but listen to this. Dane. Like that is like, yeah.
Yeah, what can I say?
Who am I? Dane. Oh, hey, meet Howard. How, do you know what I mean? Like, it's not, oh, here's my mate Darren.
Yeah, see, that's all right. It's all in the delivery, though, I feel, and also I feel like for many years, I think sometimes, I said this, it goes back to parents. It really is about what kind of life people are building for you.
Mm.
Because there's two extremes of the spectrum, I think. I think you get like common and what I see as like shitty or boring names or overused names. But at the other end of the spectrum, for me, are the over-celebrity names.
Right.
Where people give, because there is like a trend of celebrities giving their kids these really weird names that a lot of people have this trend where I feel like some people have their kid, give their kids these impossible names.
Yeah.
On the basis that it will predispose them to stardom, not realizing most of the most successful stars have very basic names.
Yeah.
Like Chris and Dave and Tom and Harrison.
But they're kind of like just like vanilla. Like
Tom,
like it's like fine. I've got nothing against Tom. He's probably quite a confident guy, you know.
Yeah, because Tom's a common name, but Tom's not a shit, but not name. A shit name.
Yeah.
Whereas like Graham, that's no offense to name. All that's our listeners shit, who call Graham,
shit,
but Graham
shit.
Is Graham, Howard, and Darren are going on a night out.
No, cool.
Do you know what? I've just got something going. I can't make it.
They'll be out there. Nothing much happens.
Yeah.
Like,
nobody went.
Basically, Graham got on the jukebox for a bit, and then they got drinks in.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Like, you know, whoever knows Howard loves an IPA.
Yeah, Yates's wine bar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They when it closed, they went home.
And Darren's tenure, but the bar used to be 20 years
ago. You should have been there. You should have been there.
It used to be a record shop. Yeah.
And Darren said, yeah, come back to my house. I've still got some of the vinyls. And everyone went, oh, come on, Graham. Nah, you know, in the morning, I've got a bus to drive.
There's some names that are just unfortunate names that have gone wrong. Like the name, I was just checking the name, name Fanny.
Yeah.
You're laughing, Darren. That used to be a name. That used to be a popular name. I don't think you're going to find many Fannies anymore because we are all aware of what that word is used for.
Yeah, and I feel like, but then that's the problem is that, like, because their connotation becomes associated to the name, once people still use that name, then that's already there. But then I feel at the same time, like I said, I feel like, I just feel personally, it's just how you carry it.
Right.
I think it's how you carry it. I think there are Darrens and there are Howards out there, and if you just carry a name in a certain way, because, you know, Elon is not a name.
No.
And I don't think it's going to be a name moving forward. And that's because the person with it, I'm pretty sure, would trademark it and charge people to use it because that's how far they would go. But I know
you get a free blue tick with it if you use it.
Probably so. No, you probably got paid monthly for that too now. Yeah. But I think for me, Dane, for example, as a name, was because I had this name from like the 80s onwards, and it wasn't a very common name.
Mm.
So a lot of the time, people would be like Dwayne, and I'd be like no, and they'd be like Dave, and I'd be like no, and then they'd be like Shane. No, Dean, and this will go on for ages because it wasn't a common name. So, and when you were a kid, you were always seeking conformity. Mm. So I'm like, well, everyone else is called Leon, and everyone else is called Jermaine, and everyone else is called Darren. So why have I got this name? And Mum would be like, I don't need to have a common name. And I'd be like, but I can't buy any souvenirs when we go to theme parks. Like, I'm a nobody. Like, it's this. You can't buy a T-shirt. You can't buy like any souvenir where they got all the list of D's. You're like, oh, no. Even when you go to like,
you don't get that with Howard. Yeah, no Howard.
Well, it's Howard. You definitely get a Howard in there.
No, there's no Howards.
There's
in there.
There's no Howards.
I used to go to all the things, the theme parks or the gift shops, and never see.
See,
a
whereas
Howard
I got
there.
that little teaser where that Darren was there.
Oh, yeah, Darren was there.
And then it's just like, do I just spell my name wrong so I can have this key? No, I can't.
No, you got
just
to see, and that builds character. those events like that build character.
Darren, have you had a complicated relationship with your name?
Yes, in the sense of all my certificates at school are D-A-R-R scribble N, where they've put an E and then they've gone, oh, that's how you spell my name. They go, okay. And they just draw an A over it. Like, oh, that's wonderful.
So like a new character you've invented. The scribble.
So even now doing comedy, promoters, Darren, can you share like the poster? I'm like, no. Is that why? Because you spelled my name horrendously wrong on it. First name and surname you spelled incorrectly. So just like, no. It's that. It's a love-hate thing of, I like that it is different, but then it's also a pain in the ass that it's different. And if it was the same, then it would be maybe just that bit shitter.
Yeah.
If it was the same.
I think those slight changes to names can make them a bit more, give them a bit more longevity and a bit more distinction. I think also what I think gives a name, makes a name shit, is how it's pronounced by that person.
Right.
Because I knew somebody called Sharon. And she used to be like, my name is Sharon. And I'd be like, it very definitely is not Sharon. Because this is not how that is spelled. Mm. I think it's predictability as well. Like, most people called Claire are going to have the middle name Louise. Or if their name is Emma, middle name is going to be Louise.
Yeah.
Chloe as well would normally be followed by Louise.
Yeah, I think almost like good 50% of the girls in my class at school's middle name was Louise. I grew up in Essex.
So there you go. So I think overuse can make a name become very shit.
Yeah.
I'm sure the name Darren in Essex as well.
Yeah.
Got a good milking.
Yeah.
Really good milking. And then shortened to Daz and Dow.
The Dow. That's it. Daz Dow. And Dow.
Dow?
Dow. Dow.
How does that work?
I don't know how you spell Dow. I still don't know how to spell it. But Dow.
It's like a very Essex intonation where Gow. You kind of drop something like, what, Dow?
What, Dow? Like Gal?
Yeah, Gal. For Gary.
Right, okay.
Yeah. For Terry's Tell.
So saving people that much time, is it? probably have to explain it when you do it, wouldn't you?
My ex-girlfriend's mum was named Caroline. They call her Cal.
Okay.
So it's like, I guess it's like, you know, sometimes people say Kaz as well for Caroline. So, and Daz as well for Darren. Mm. So it's just playing with the language, I suppose. Yeah.
I'll never really accept my name. And one of the reasons is, that I was named after my grandfather, who died about a year or two before I was born, and I was going to be called his name, Harry, and then my dad decided he couldn't call, he just couldn't deal with it, saying his dad's name all the time. So he was like, let's change it to something shitter.
Something I don't want to say. Ever.
It's Harry.
Something I never want to say in the house. Where's the other one? Where's the younger one? Where's that? Where? What's his face? What's his face?
Have you ever played with shorten it, like Howie?
Yeah, so...
There you go, Howie.
Like, it's interesting you say this, but like, you know, genuinely, I'm not a Howie. Like, you spend a bit of time and Saffron's going, yeah. Howie's not...
I'm thinking Howie vibes.
Howie's the kind of guy...
No.
No, no. Howie's the kind of guy, he comes into the office, he's wearing shorts, it's not a shorts day.
Yeah.
He's bought everyone frozen yogurt. Do you know what I mean?
That is Howie.
That's Howie. Hey!
Howard has a bike. Howie has a bike and Howard has a bike. Yeah. Howie's bike don't have a helmet.
Yes.
Howard has a helmet.
With lights.
Yeah, with lights. On the back too.
Yeah.
Howie's bike is, I don't know, at the most, maybe he's got like, you know, he's got like tickers at the back.
Yeah.
Something that flies
you can
off.
Hear his music when he goes past.
He's got like a lowrider cycle.
Yeah.
Howie. I hear that.
I'm not Howie. And how is just confusing. Because you're just saying a very popular word.
Asking a question.
Yeah, no, I did actually used to get that at school because I'd, you know, obviously fall asleep at school quite a lot and I'd hear them suddenly say, how would you describe it? And I'd be like, what? it's not me. Okay,
and you can't do H anymore. That's taken.
Yeah, that's not as popular as it once was.
Yeah.
Oh, well, stuck with this shit name for life. Thanks, parents.
Are there any... You could change it by deed poll if you wanted to.
It's too late. Wife's not going to accept that.
It's never too late, Howard. Yeah, just ask Caitlyn Jenner. You can change your name and have a whole new life. I mean, that's very different why she went that whole way. But a better example would be Elliot Page.
Right.
Don't even have to do a big change. Yeah. Just enough of a change that people know you have a different lifestyle. But I don't know. I still think that, like, I find that some of the more classic names, I enjoy them a lot more than people who try to make names. Do you remember when Jaden Smith was born?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Oh, my goodness. That was crazy. Then it was like so many Jadens.
Oh, yeah.
Jalens, Cadens, Kalens, Kalens, Karens. There's so many of them. Yeah. Like, when Jaden Smith was born, everybody and their sister had took that name and changed it, which I guess a lot of people loved it. More surprising, not as much Barack as I thought it was going to be.
Mm. No, it's a... It's a committed name.
Yeah. It's a lot of pressure. I met an accountant once called Samson.
Right. There you go.
There's a lot of pressure. But he obviously was like, I know what everyone thinks, but actually I'm great with the numbers. Oh, thank you very much. So, you know, there's also names that will never, like I said, Adolf.
Yeah.
If you're called Adolf in this day and age, we know what kind of life you're going to have. Even if you don't want it.
Yeah.
Yeah, good luck to you.
You're going to come home and you're going to be like, this meat tastes funny because there's no seasoning. Let me tell you why, son. That's the kind of life you've got. Adolf is not going to be a fun name. It's going to be like, go on, son. Show me how you do it. Go on. Tell me what it is. Have a kiss. They don't mind, son. Go on, stick it out there. There you go. Look at how vertical his arm is. That's going to be lovely. I love this festival. Adolf. And then about four kids turn around. Yes, Dad. So... Yeah.
Insights. That's what you get here on Dane Baptiste. Everything.
I'm just saying, I think it's important to go for names because, you know, they say a rose by any other name, but there are some names that aren't just going to fly like they used to. Beyonce is way too much pressure.
Yeah, don't do that to people.
That's way too much pressure.
Beyonce is one of those names, I've said this as well on stage before, in just a kind of fleeting thought, that it is only because she is Beyonce.
Yes. Mm.
That name is acceptable.
Yeah. It's one of those names that describes the person.
Because if she worked in Burger King, she would still look fantastic, but then you'd be like, what's your name? It's like Beyonce. It's like, what?
Yeah, she wouldn't.
What did you just say?
She wouldn't be called Beyonce.
No, to be fair, I would go so far as to say that would be entirely true up until Burger King Beyonce got a Snapchat.
That's true.
And then you'd be like, there's some girl at Burger King that flips burgers called Beyonce. She's crazy, you know? She can bear jokes. Like, that's how it would go. Like Cardi B. Her real name is Bez Cali or something like that.
It's
like,
some kind of...
It's super Latin name. But yeah, she's got quite an interesting
name. I feel like we got to the bottom of the crap names question. I'm just going to say, Darren, touch your knee very little amount. I'm with you on the shit names today. You've always got a support here in Howard.
So it
luck,
seems more
Darren.
Like he grabbed you by the ankle and pulled you down with him. Shit name category.
Dane, what's your question to wrap up today's excellent episode?
My question is, as I said, Darren said that he grew up in Essex and has been described as a cool lad. But I imagine, Darren, that when people ponder the image of a lad, your image is not necessarily what comes up. Which I think is very interesting and I think adds a very unique dimension to your comedy. because I feel like the delivery and just basically just how you sound. But most people would not associate that with our look.
No, not at all.
But I feel like myself, that's always something I've wanted to fight against within comedy and try to not pigeonhole my contemporaries and my peers. And I've always wanted to make sure that there's not been a pressure for black comics to have to deliver their comedy in a certain way or have a certain aesthetic or sound that people associate with, I guess, the black British identity. So I guess what I wanted to ask you is, have you found that, you know, what has the big experience been like being a black lad, just socially as well as in comedy, is I guess what I wanted to ask.
Wow, that's a great question. That's, I guess, this is how Howard felt when I asked my first question. Because that's something that has always been there. So I could talk ages for it, but we've got 15 minutes. So what has it been like being a black lad? Well, I guess the first kind of conflict, that's it. It's always been a point of conflict and a point of almost like being on the outside of other groups.
Yes.
In the sense of being a black guy from Essex, for all my cousins are in London, so Southeast London, like yourself, Lewisham, Blue Borough, and then Northwest London, and so
which is as black as you get in London. Because they're from Brent, isn't it?
Those
two boroughs,
So I was always, you're so and so's cousin from the country.
Yes,
and it was the thing of them talking amongst themselves like, what? There's like, why does he talk like that? Like, why does he talk like what? And growing up, I'm born in late 80s, 90s, London equaled black.
Yeah.
So it was, if you was white and you was from London and you spoke with that kind of, you know, I guess what they call multicultural English now, you'd be deemed as, why are you talking like you're black? Mm-hmm. And vice versa, that if you was black, and maybe if I was from Manchester, where I could hear a strong other accent, then they'd be like, oh, he's from Manchester. But the fact that I was from Essex, which kind of sounds like London, but it's not quite London. Mm. Actually, it just sounds like the white people from London. That's what was in their heads growing up.
And that's because a lot of the working class white people in London moved to Essex.
So for them, it's like, why does he talk like he's white? Even when I got to uni, where, you know, it's meant to be a bit more open-minded, multicultural, it was only like a few months in where one of my mates spoke to someone who knew me and he found out I was from Essex, and he just kind of went, oh, because what? Because I thought you was like someone from like North London, and he just talked, you know, how you talk.
Did you go to?
Aston in Birmingham. This makes more sense now. It makes more sense. So it's always from that perspective. Then the flip side of the lad perspective, in the sense of, until I open my mouth, I'm that big black fella. In a pub, is that big? And I'm not even that big. I just think there's something that's in kind of white people's minds that black people get bigger.
Listen, I go to comedy clubs, if I wear black, people will stand in front of me because they expect me to search them as a bouncer.
Yeah.
I don't have a bouncer's physique, but it can work. People come up to me and go like that, spread their arms.
Yeah.
That's for a search.
You just put your arms up, please.
You can get a lot of free drugs from doing that.
in the corner of a pub and people being like, not sure how I'm going to be.
Yeah.
And then I'll open my mouth and then I'm talking about football and I order a pint. And then they're like, oh, yeah, you're all right. Dal's all right. It's just like,
so what? It's just freaky Friday. That's all right.
they're having to reconcile that. And then I guess in comedy, it's a similar thing of, I didn't really make a conscious effort. It just happened that I never went to the black circuit or to the mainstream. So I just did gigs where I could do gigs.
Yeah, yeah.
So I ended up gigging on both.
Me too, yeah.
And, but I did find myself when I did the black rooms, seeing everyone come on, like, hey, South London, make some noise, and the crowd go crazy. And they're telling kind of those anecdotal stories and jokes about growing up in London. I felt a pressure of, oh, well, my experience growing up in London is visiting my cousins. So I'm going to tell stories about me and my cousins. And the crowd are kind of just like, don't really get it, whatever. And then someone else comes and was like, yeah, West London makes a noise. Crowd goes crazy. I'm like, okay, what's going on here? And then it's only when I saw, it's two things happen. I saw Jason Patterson to start talking about a pub, like going to the pub and stuff. And even though he's from South West London, I saw the crowd, black crowd kind of pull back from it.
Yeah,
but I sat there really just laughing my head off because I've just got everything he was talking about, and I thought, well, he's being authentic.
Yes, he is.
And then when I went, so when I next went on stage, and the first thing I said was, oh, I'm from Essex. And there was this collective, like, bubble pop in the black, in the crowd of Black Room, where they kind of went, this is, okay, now tell your jokes. Because I never realised, until I said I was from Essex, in front of a Black Room, they kind of sat there just going, there's something not connecting here. We don't understand what's happening. He's saying things. I don't get what he's saying. I'm not listening.
Why does man sound like that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't understand.
What is that? He's trying to go mainstream or something like that. That's what, man, be real, bro. What's going on?
And then as soon as I'm from Essex, they're like, oh, and then I make jokes about that. They're like, Yeah, you're right. Man's out there still.
Brave, bruv.
It sounds like you've managed to kind of overcome some of this adversity.
Yeah, I've, in comedy.
I'm not talking about the world. That would be an insane statement to make, by the way. But you know, in terms of
but that's how it happens, though, Howard. I think it's that I brought it up because I've had a similar experience. Mm. Well, I guess obviously I grew up in Southeast London and in Lewisham. But even when I grew up in Lewisham, where I grew up in Lewisham wasn't like Lewisham Central.
Right.
Even though I could kind of relate to a lot of those experiences. But I definitely found that my approach, and just in terms of like how to deliver comedy to a predominantly black audience, there can be some pullback if you're not, if you haven't got the experience of knowing how to contextualize that narrative.
Yeah.
And it's equally challenging because the way it doesn't work the other way around. If you are a white comic and you can mimic what is perceived to be what they call like black vernacular or like any black kind of tonalisms, you will be lauded and pedestalized and you'll be celebrated. If you are, and 100%. That's not just in comedy, you see that in music as well, where, you know, if you're an Adele or Ed Sheeran, like, and you can look at any of these artists, all of the people singing behind them are black.
Yeah.
Because I don't know one good white singer who doesn't have all black backing singers. But to be able to mimic a black sound as a white person is almost like a cheat code for stardom, where he's going from Elvis to Eminem, etc. Whereas being a black person that can mimic white people, the only time we've seen that successful is in more recent times with the current cabinet in the government. And even part of that narrative means you almost have to actively deny your ethnicity, whether it's you have regressive policies against other people that resemble you, or you deny any of the challenges that come with being a part of that ethnicity at the same time. But yeah, it's a very
you get rolled out as that voice on morning television when, you know, when a racism happens the night before. And they go, okay, so we've got this person, and like usually it's Dr. Scholler on one side. And then they roll out the other person who's just like,
Kevin Reznor goes,
racism. I mean, oh, here we go again, talking about race, and they just play it down.
Literally, I remember an experience with Kemi Badenoch when she was the Minister for Racial Equality. Who, first of all, her ticket was that she doesn't believe that racism is an issue in the UK.
Brilliant.
But I did a, I was on a show, Cross Questions, in LBC, and I just basically was commenting on just how bad she was for the job. But they had misquoted me on the show and said that I said she was the wrong kind of black, which isn't something I would say. Because it's just very simplistic. And also it'd be kind of hypocritical for me to talk about this. But her reply was, I don't need to listen to the experience of racism from a black person that's born, brought up in the UK, because I was born in Nigeria. So that person's experience of racism is not relevant to me.
To black people in the UK?
Because as a black she says about me, because I'm a black person in the UK, what could I tell her about racism when she's from actually from Africa? However, I would beg to differ, because that's actually your job. You're supposed to be listening to people in this country about experiences of racism. It's not
all my constituents, unless you're from Nigeria, like me, I don't really care what you've got to say.
But she was like at the time minister for like Saffron and Walden. And you know, there's like, you know that is there's like 11 black people there. And
that's literally the next kind of borough from where I grew up.
We know there's about 11 black people there. And
Michael, Stephen,
right? You know them, and them, and only five of them just play for the football teams nearby. So. But no, it's important to bring up, because I think that like a big part of my work and I guess my journey within comedy was that I found a lot of predominantly black rooms. There was very few, was quite narrow pockets for you to kind of move within. Like you said, if you're not from zones 1 to 6, or you can't maybe key into your, I suppose, your immigrant heritage and be like, I'm from Nigeria or Congo or Ghana, etc., then those audiences would kind of, be a bit more defensive or be a lot less receptive of what you were saying, because I think, you know, black people are as subject or victim as white people in that they take their self-image based on media suggestion.
Yeah, 100%.
So for most black people do not, because they don't see that there are black people in Essex, because they will not be given profile. If they don't see black people, that many black people in Wales, unless it's Colin Jackson or Shirley Bassey, they don't really see them there. And so they begin to build this idea in their head that black communities can't thrive in those places. Black people, if they do live in these places, cannot be in touch with their own identity. And yeah, only up until recently where I've seen a lot, just due to, like, I suppose, economic reasons, more members of the diaspora are moving into places like Kent or moving further out to Surrey, or more people are living in Essex. And I don't mean just like Ilford.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean like moving out into Essex.
Yeah, yeah.
Then people are becoming a lot more receptive to it. But yeah, it's interesting you had a kind of similar experience.
Yeah, and it's exactly that. And I think I do look at, you know, you're another act, because you were someone I'd, you know, watched do comedy before I started doing comedy. And I always remember your voice standing out to me for that kind of similar reason of, I hate how this sounds. It doesn't sound like the other black guys.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's,
no, and it was very distinctive.
Yeah.
I was, you know, at the time, I remember exactly where I was. I was like, oh, this guy's got that thing that a lot of British acts don't have.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, and you've talked about this before on this show, Dane, the kind of inspiration from America or certain acts in America that isn't a traditional British sound for a comedian, I would say. You know, so it did stand out.
Yeah.
And it's like you said, I get the point where saying it's not like the other black guys, but the reason why I made it a personal point not to feel the pressure to conform.
Yeah.
Because I'm weaned on the same comics that my other counterparts are, like, whether it's like Def Jam and stuff like that, BET Comic View, like, you know, whether it's the Kevin Harts and the Chris Tuckers and the Cat Williams, I'm watching the same comics and stuff as well. But I think for me, it was like one of the things where it's like, they do it so well, I can't mimic that.
Right.
But it's more of a question of, rather than, like I said, not just like, don't sound like the other black guys doing it. It was more like, I'm trying to sound like all the black guys.
Yeah.
Whether you're the black guy from Stonebridge, or you're the black guy from Milford Estate, or Pepys Estate, or North Peckham Estate. But, you know, you can also be the black guy that lives in Norwich.
Yeah.
Or you're the black guy who, you know, you live in Southend, and your parents are like, have come over, and that's where they've, because they're like doctors or nurses and stuff. Because, yeah, it was definitely about, because I think even then, if we limit ourselves with language and even limit ourselves with archetypes, it very much limits our ability to have that kind of broad reach anyway.
Yeah.
Well, and so, it taps into that thing that's come up a number of times in this show, Dane, which I'm often keen to repeat, which is stop saying the black race, black races.
Yeah.
Multiple different groups within different identities.
Yep.
Stop doing that.
It's about, because, and I guess on that base, of course, because then once we start to try to question other people's blackness, then it becomes even more restrictive. And I think it's about, if anything, anything that will link us really is ideology and politics.
Mm-hmm.
Because whether it's all nuanced, but we all have kind of a similar experience in that respect.
Yeah.
Whether it's like common ancestry and common experiences in terms of where we are placed in society, kind of thing. But yeah, I think, have you found that you've gotten a lot of feedback from people who are also from like Essex and stuff like that?
Yeah,
it's
the same thing with my, so if it's the show content, so if I'll talk about IVF, people come up to me going, oh, I've gone for IVF, or my sister's gone for IVF, or if I talk about, you know, growing up in Essex, it always just, there's always just one black guy or black woman kind of like, oh yeah, I'm a Romford. Oh, yeah, I'm a Chelmsford. It's like, okay, yeah.
I grew up in Ilford, by the way.
It's Ilford, I think. Yeah.
So it's massively important. I think it's super important, because, you know, I think comedy, and I've always felt like comedy is the more honest version of politics.
Yeah.
In that, number one, its barriers to entry aren't the same as normal political parties and stuff. And number two, like, that's how you're effective, is that how many people can relate to your narrative and your manifesto. You're bringing other people in from different constituencies, from different places. So it's good that someone's locking it down for the Essex gang.
Well, we'll be rooting for you. You've been an excellent guest. It's been an excellent episode, Dane.
It's covered a lot of good, important stuff.
a lot of good stuff.
People coming up to you, I hope.
But this is our chance to tell listeners.
Yeah, sure. So let's know about the show Inconceivable. When and where can people find it at the Fringe Festival?
So at the Fringe, it's going to be at Bunker One at Pleasance Courtyard.
Go on, mate. Go on, mate.
Be at 4:45.
Good time.
So fucking go on, Darren.
Yes.
Come on, mate.
That's going to be 4:45. So yeah, get tickets.
Is that Ilford, Howard? That's how much how Howard from Ilford.
Tell you why, listeners.
Go on, good sir.
Tell you why, listeners. I'm saying that is because, and we're not going to do this now because we've got to wrap up the show. But like, that's a tough place to go.
Right.
You got a chance, mate.
Yeah,
with the Fringe.
Yeah, you got a chance to do something for yourself there. Yeah. And those two things you just said to me, Bunker One, Pleasance, quarter to five.
Yeah, quarter to five. Yep.
Do you know what? Go on, Darren. You can fucking have that, mate.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're like telling me something different, I'd be like,
I'll see you, mate.
Good luck, fucking hell, Darren.
I know you mean. What 1:30 a.m. at the Yuck Lounge? Yeah. It's like, where's that? It's in Leaf.
It's above the kebab shop.
Yeah.
And I'm living there too, so you can. So
that's there. I've got work in progress shows up and down the country on my I've got the dates for that on my website, darangriffiths.com/inconceivable. And yeah, that's where you can see me. You can find me online at Daran Griff on Twitter and Instagram.
And you can also check out Darren Griffith's Brain Dump, which is available on Spotify.
My other podcast, because we absolutely cussed Mike Wackadiri when he went on National Radio and didn't plug our podcast. So we have another podcast with Mike Wackadiri and Kazeem Jamal called Late Nights and Wet Wipes, and it's just us talking about parenting. We start the podcast.
You're all new dads as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, shout out Kazeem. Yeah, shout out Mike Wackadiri as well. Yeah. Good friend of the podcast. Kazeem, man, come on the podcast soon, man. We need to finish off the Three Musketeers then.
Yeah, well, I need to write to that podcast. I've got lots of fucking material for you.
Yeah,
you
know, please do.
Jesus Christ. What a pleasure, though. And, mate, honestly, best of luck.
No, right, cheers. Thank you.
And best of luck to Saffron, our producer, who's
I'm not ready to talk about Saffron right now. But thank you very much, Darren. Been a pleasure having you on the podcast.
Is there a sad version of the theme song we can play at the end?
You've been listening to Dane Baptiste Questions Everything, hosted by Dane Baptiste and myself, Howard Cohen. For more from Dane and myself, make sure you follow us on Instagram at DaneSnapteast and at The Howard Cohen. You can now support us on Patreon. Just search DBQE Podcast and unlock ad-free content, and you can watch the full-length video of the podcast. Please don't forget to rate, review and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. If you have a question for Dane, make sure you send us a DM on Instagram at DBQE Podcast, and we could feature you in our next episode. Thanks for listening, guys, and remember, question everything.